Welcome, everybody, to the Savitri sessions on Infinite Conversations. We're picking up where we left off on page 195, the last section of Kingdoms and Godheads of the Greater Life. And then after that, we'll pause for a discussion on that section, and then we'll have a pass through the entire canto. I think without pause, although who knows what could possibly happen. So after a meditation, let's go in the reading order of Jeffrey, John Robert, Andrea, Marco, and then myself.
Here is the gap. Here stops or sinks life's force. This deficit paupers the magician's skill. This want makes all the rest seem thin and bare. A half sight draws the horizon of her acts. Her depths remember what she came to do, but the mind has forgotten or the heart mistakes. In nature's endless lines is lost the God. In knowledge to sum up omniscience, in action to erect the omnipotent, to create her creator, here was her heart's conceit, to invade the cosmic scene with utter God. Toiling to transform the still far absolute into an all-fulfilling epiphany, into an utterance of the ineffable, she would bring the glory here of the absolute's force, change poise into creation's rhythmic swing, marry with a sky of calm, a sea of bliss.
A fire to call eternity into time, make bodies' joys as vivid as the soul's. Earth she would lift to neighborhood with heaven. Labor's life to equate with the supreme and reconcile the eternal and the abyss. Her pragmatism of the transcendent truth fills silence with the voices of the gods, but in the cry, the single voice is lost. For nature's vision climbs beyond her acts. A life of gods in heaven she sees above. A demigod emerging from an ape is all she can in our mortal element. Here, the half-god, the half-titan, are her peak. This greater life wavers twixt earth and sky. A poignant paradox pursues her dreams. Her hooded energy moves in an ignorant world to look for a joy her own strong clasp puts off. In her embrace, it cannot turn to its source. Immense her power, endless her acts, vast drive. Astray is its significance and lost. Although she carries in her secret breast the law and journeying curve of all things born, her knowledge partial seems, her purpose small. On a soil of yearning, tread her sumptuous hours. A leaden nescience weighs the wings of thought. Her power oppresses the being with its garbs. Her actions prison its immortal gaze. A sense of limit haunts her masteries, and nowhere is assured content or peace. For all the depth and beauty of her work, a wisdom lacks that sets the spirit free. An old and faded charm had now her face and palled for him her quick and curious lore. His wide soul asked a deeper joy than hers.
Out of her daedal lines he sought escape, but neither gate of horn nor ivory he found, nor postern of spiritual sight. There was no issue from that dreamlike space. Our being must move eternally through time. Death helps us not. Vain is the hope to cease. A secret will compels us to endure. Our life's repose is in the infinite. It cannot end. Its end is life supreme. Death is a passage, not the goal of our walk. Some ancient deep impulsion labors on. Our souls are dragged as with a hidden leash, carried from birth to birth, from world to world. Our acts prolong after the body's fall, the old perpetual journey without pause. No silent peak is found where time can rest. This was a magic stream that reached no sea. However far he went, wherever turned, the wheel of works ran with him and outstripped. Always a farther task was left to do. A beat of action and a cry of search forever grew in that unquiet world. A busy murmur filled the heart of time. All was contrivance and unceasing stir. 100 ways to live were tried in vain. A sameness that assumed 1,000 forms strove to escape from its long monotone and made new things that soon were like the old. A curious decoration lured the eye, and novel values furbished ancient themes to cheat the mind with the idea of change. A different picture that was still the same appeared upon the cosmic vague background. Only another labyrinthine house of creatures and their doings and events, a city of the traffic of bound souls, a market of creation and her wares, was offered to the laboring mind and heart.
A circuit ending where it first began is dubbed the forward and eternal march of progress on perfection's unknown road. Each final scheme leads to a sequel plan. Yet every new departure seems the last, inspired evangel, theory's ultimate peak, proclaiming a panacea for all time's ills, or carrying thought in its ultimate zenith flight, and trumpeting supreme discovery. Each brief idea, a structure perishable, publishes the immortality of its rule, its claim to be the perfect form of things, truth's last epitome, time's golden best. But nothing has been achieved of infinite worth. A world made ever anew, never complete, piled always half attempts on lost attempts, and saw a fragment as the eternal whole. In the aimless mounting total of things done, existence seemed a vain necessity's act, a wrestle of eternal opposites in a clasped antagonism's close-locked embrace. A play without denouement or idea, a hunger march of lives without a goal, or, written on a bare blackboard of space, a futile and recurring sum of souls, a hope that failed, a light that never shone, the labor of an unaccomplished force tied to its acts in a dim eternity. There is no end, or none can yet be seen. Although defeated, life must struggle on. Always she sees a crown she cannot grasp. Her eyes are fixed beyond her fallen state. There quivers still within her breast and ours a glory that was once and is no more. Or there calls to us from some unfulfilled beyond a greatness yet unreached by the halting world.
in a memory behind our mortal sense, a dream persists of larger, happier air, breathing around free hearts of joy and love, forgotten by us, immortal in lost time. A ghost of bliss pursues her haunted depths, for she remembers still, though now so far, her realms of golden ease and glad desire, and the beauty and strength and happiness that were hers. In the sweetness of her glowing paradise, in her kingdom of immortal ecstasy, halfway between God's silence and the abyss. This knowledge in our hidden parts we keep, awake to a vague mystery's appeal. We meet a deep unseen reality, far truer than the world's face of present truth. We are chased by a self we cannot now recall, and moved by a spirit we must still become. As one who has lost the kingdom of his soul, we look back to some God phase of our birth, other than this imperfect creature here, and hope in this or a diviner world to recover yet from heaven's patient guard what, by our mind's forgetfulness, we miss, our being's natural felicity, our heart's delight we have exchanged for grief, the body's thrill we bartered for mere pain, the bliss for which our mortal nature yearns, as yearns an obscure moth to blazing light. Our life is a march to a victory never won. This wave of being longing for delight, this eager turmoil of unsatisfied strengths, these long, far flies of forward striving hopes lift worshiping eyes to the blue void called heaven, looking for the golden hand that never came, the advent for which all creation waits, the beautiful visage of eternity that shall appear upon the roads of time.
Yet still to ourselves we say, rekindling faith, oh, surely one day he shall come to our cry. One day he shall create our life anew and utter the magic formula of peace and bring perfection to the scheme of things. One day he shall descend to life and earth, leaving the secrecy of the eternal doors into a world that cries to him for help, and bring the truth that sets the spirit free, the joy that is the baptism of the soul, the strength that is the outstretched arm of love. One day he shall lift his beauty's dreadful veil, impose delight on the world's beating heart, and bear his secret body of light and bliss. But now we strain to reach an unknown goal. There is no end of seeking and of birth. There is no end of dying and return. The life that wins its aim asks greater aims. The life that fails and dies must live again. Till it has found itself, it cannot cease. All must be done for which life and death were made. But who shall say that even then is rest? Or their repose and action are the same in the deep breast of God's supreme delight. In a high state where ignorance is no more, each movement is a wave of peace and bliss. Repose God's motionless creative force. Action, a ripple in the infinite, and birth, a gesture of eternity. A sun of transformation still can shine, and night can bear its core of mystic light. The self-canceling, self-afflicting paradox into a self-luminous mystery might change, the imbroglio into its joyful miracle.
Then God could be visible here. Here, take a shape. Disclosed would be the spirit's identity. Life would reveal her true immortal face. But now, a termless labor is her fate. In its recurrent decimal of events, birth, death are a ceaseless iteration's points. The old question mark margins each finished page, each volume of her effort's history. A limping yes through the eons journeys still, accompanied by an eternal no. All seems in vain, yet endless is the game. Impassive turns the ever-circling wheel. Life has no issue. Death brings no release. A prisoner of itself, the being lives and keeps its futile immortality. Extinction is denied its soul escape. An error of the gods has made the world. Or, indifferent, the eternal watches time. End of Canto 6.
What a final thought, those two complete sentences. An error of the gods has made the world, or indifferent, the internal watches time. Wow.
Oh, joy.
Kind of bleak.
Does anyone know what deodal means, or postern? I would need to look them up. Postern sounds like a container. But I'm thinking cistern.
Isn't postern a kind of, well, I may be wrong, but a kind of post?
A post? Oh.
Yeah, I think so. But,
My notes say backdoor for postern, and dadal is maze-like.
There's a literary publication that's beautiful, I think, called Deidis. Anyone know that Deidis? Daedalus, maybe? Yeah, maze.
I haven't heard of that, but that's a neat word. I thought there might be a connection to Daedalus, but leave it to Sri Aurobindo to introduce that word.
I really heard Eliot's voice in the first sentence of this section. Like, I know that Sri Aurobindo was very well aware of Eliot. I'm pretty sure that Eliot was not aware at all of Sri Aurobindo, though I can't say that for certain. I think that that's a pretty good assumption. And I know that Eliot was on Sri Aurobindo's bookshelf. Like, there, the four quartets had already been published in the 19... I don't know the exact order of publication of the four quartets, but there's a lot of, Krishna and Arjuna were in the four quartets. Eliot.
We're losing you.
Naptagupta, one of the, sorry if it broke up, how's that? Can you hear me?
A little better.
I can hear you, but your video is frozen. There you're back.
Still frozen?
It's very jerky.
Sorry to be such a jerk. Where did you hear?
You were remarking on Elliot.
Now I'm just
maybe if there was any overlap, whether that indicating that Aurobindo likely had read Elliot, but not the other way around. And I wonder if you were hearing in this line about the gap, that sort of still center point that Elliot focuses on in the first, in, I think Bert Norton or East Coker, one of those two.
Yeah, that's totally it.
Mm-hmm. The mood is certainly kind of an Elliot, I don't know what the word would be, Eliotian, Eliotian tenor, I think, this kind of dim.
Eliot-esque.
Eliot-esque, right. You know, this sort of dim view of the purpose and meaning of all manifestation, and a kind of, I don't know, now Elliot's a sort of sanguine, sort of just resting voice. But what I don't find in Elliot, although I think it may be there in latent ways and in different guises, is the kind of the joy or the exuberance or the joie de vie, you know, that kind of happiness and that joyfulness. He was writing between the two wars, and I think was deeply impacted, you know, by those events. And in, you know, Aurobindo certainly also went through some serious changes in the world and some tumultuous events, and was at the center of you know, immense struggle on the other side of the British Empire. You know, he's taking us through the phases of a journey, and this kind of phase of sort of despondency, you know, at what manifestation, what relative existence can offer, that like there's a repetition of the same, there's a recurrence of motifs, there's a sort of playing out of possibilities that doesn't resolve into something that's finally satisfactory. You know, it remains unsatisfactory in the manner that the Buddha taught. And so I'm not surprised that the next canto that we're going to move on to, although not today, is The Descent into Night. This, I think, is also where Elliot takes us into that night space. And this, in Aurobindo, I understand, is like one phase in vaster cycles of experience that unfold through the soul's evolution. So just some thoughts there. I think you might be back. In you look smooth now, Matteo. You wanted to continue.
Oh, beautiful, Marco. I'd like to echo something that Nolini Kantagupta wrote, who was a sadhak with Sri Aurobindo almost his whole entire time. He wrote that after he commented on the four quartets, saying, if I recall correctly, Elliot has become the poet of the dark night of the soul with the publication of the four quartets. And it's always like a little ironic because he's actually trying to reach for the light, but he's not, it doesn't seem to me like the light comes through. It seems like he gets stuck in this realm that, you're right, Sri Aurobindo is passing through and cycling through.
The last two lines of this canto also remind me of the lines from King Lear: as flies to wanton boys are we to the gods, they kill us for their sport. You know, he was Shakespearean as well as Eliot-tisk.
Eliot-tisk. Certainly Sri Aurobindo loved and read Shakespeare. You could go French Canadian and say Eliotois. This quote on the second to the last page, Katie Sethna termed this quote, the certitude of God's descent. That little quote, line 967 to 978 or something. Really powerful.
I can't find it.
Page 200, there's a quote that begins a couple lines down.
Oh, surely.
Yep.
Where's the certitude?
Oh, surely one day he shall come to our cry. One day he shall create our life anew and utter the magic formula of peace and bring perfection to the scheme of things. One day he shall descend to life and earth, leaving the secrecy of the eternal doors, leaving the secrecy of the eternal doors into a world that cries to him for help, and bring the truth that sets the spirit free, the joy that is the baptism of the soul, the strength that is the outstretched arms of love. One day he shall lift his beauty's dreadful veil, impose delight on the world's beating heart, and bear his secret body of light and bliss. Something that I'm really getting from my Vedic studies is that the absolute is not some abstract thing. The absolute is satyam. It's truth. It's light. It's something that is, it's tangible and close, actually. And I think I'll speak for myself. It's my mind that makes the concept of the absolute abstract. And then my heart just knows that it's not, I feel it with us. And this is part of that. That certitude is part of that for me.
Although those lines there, Mateo, that quote, oh, surely one day he shall come to our cry. I wasn't sure how to take that because it's in quotations and it's something that we say to ourselves, yet still to ourselves we say rekindling faith. So it's like an aspiration or a desire or a wish, but it seems to me perhaps like part of this kind of movement of activities that are in vain, that are not actually destined to be fulfilled, that if we are waiting for some other, this absolute being to come to us. And maybe this dovetails with what you're saying.
If I may, we're waiting for mind, right? Mind is not yet, it's mind that was able, and we're working in a mind realm right now, but in this story, it is the kingdoms and godheads of the greater life. Mind is not yet. We then go into these dark kantos, the descent into night and the worlds of evil, falsehood, things like that, and then mind emerges, or Ashwapati is meditating on the worlds that he then brings it to a meditation on mind. So that's the thing. That's like a piece that's not yet complete, because then it takes mind to have access to intuitive and illumined mind states. So it's yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, Marco.
Okay, so. Because I kind of got a little like kind of God the Father vibe from this section here. Like it's more like a supplicatory type of gesture, you know, that one makes. But then after that quote, he writes, but now we strain to reach an so in other words, not in the future. Now we strain to reach an unknown goal. And then these, I think, wonderful lines here. There is no end of seeking and of birth. There is no end of dying and return. The life that wins its aim asks greater aims. The life that fails and dies must live again till it has found itself. It cannot cease. So I accept like your kind of framing this in terms of moving from life to mind. and this sort of progression that we're going through and what's coming down. Sometimes, though, I feel that it's not so clear cut. Like, there are things I hear here that sound like they're already mindful, they're already mental. Like, these are attitudes that aren't expressed just by biology, like they're expressed by mentality as well. So I get a bit confused sometimes around like where we are in the sort of progression, insofar as there is like this kind of arc of this journeying arc. I was hearing something different there, and I'm not sure exactly what it was, because it's just the first time I've heard it.
Marco, I thought it was interesting that you brought that up, because Matteo was talking about this certitude, and I was thinking when I read it, it sounded like wishful thinking. That's the way I read it. That's the way I've read it every time. It's like, this is the wishful thinking of life, and it's not fulfilled, and if there's a hope there, but it's like, oh, surely, it sounds like it's almost childlike to me.
But then a little bit later comes, in the deep breast of God's supreme delight, in the high state where ignorance is no more, each movement is a wave of peace and bliss. Repose, God's motionless creative force. Action, a ripple in the infinity. And birth, a gesture of eternity. So for me, there is the promise of that. And that we feel somehow in our ignorance, we feel that reality that seems to be forever beyond us, but that it is actually there. And eventually, I think we will get there. I hope.
And there's that hope again. And yes, it is there is a religion, almost a Christian religiosity feel. Oh God, the Father, and maybe even that touch of childish sarcasm. Oh, surely one day he shall come. However, I see a strong element of faith, and it's like the line that kind of leads into that. And there's a kind of a mental faith, which is probably more belief. But then there's also along with that, the deep yogic practice of shraddha, the deep yogic practice of faith, which is certitude of something that's not yet manifested, which is like different than belief, right? There's a certitude backing faith, kind of in the Sanskrit definition of shraddha. And it's not faith if it's manifested, right? There is that element.
So the more I read Aurobindo, the more I sort of come to this idea that he wants us to question our general understanding of terms that are widely used in the culture, but for which he means something rather different than what is widely assumed. And I think, so like Matthew, you were talking about the absolute although I agree with you about this idea about the absolute, I don't think it means the same as what the Christians mean when they talk about the absolute or even other texts. I think what is meant by absolute is something a little bit different from all. So I'm a bit hesitant to accept the sort of first idea that comes to mind as one reads these texts. I think one always has to look a little bit beyond the first surface reading, because Aurobindo is usually trying to say something a bit different. Anyway, I'm not sure that I'm making any sense, but.
Yeah, you're making a lot of sense, and there's a ton of examples of what you're saying that it's true for. Yeah, psychic being, faith, the absolute, definitely. There's different, he teases out the different Sanskrit definitions of truth to help us get at that too. Yeah, intuition. He goes into the depths of that and starts showing us that a lot of the ways that we use the word intuition is really just rapid fire rationality. And the study of intuition is intricate and takes I feel like I'm in preschool with that. It takes a lot to get into that.
Jeffrey, I thought you were going to say Sri Aurobindo wants us to experience lots and lots of different states. So not just the where we hope we're going, but like in this quote here, and also the two lines at the end of this canto, an heir of the gods has made the world. He really takes us into, well, the next canto too, the descent into night. I mean, it's like dropping off a cliff going down there. It doesn't pull any punch. I mean, he makes it really real. It's like he's there, and we get to go there if we dare. All of these different states, I mean, I read, oh, surely, it's kind of wishful thinking. It doesn't seem cynical to me at all. It just seems childlike. And I don't know if that's the way Sri Aurobindo meant it or not, but it seems like he's willing to take us into any state that humans inhabit and then lead us from there to where it's going evolutionarily.
Yeah, I guess what I was getting is that this, surely. So we all have a need for certainty. We experience a kind of yearning for security, for certainty. And that's what's being expressed here. And you hear it in other religious texts, this sort of, you know, certainty about these things. And in a way, he's sort of saying, well, this is a state among other states. And so it's not more true or less true of anything else. So I'm sort of agreeing with you, John Robert. But later, as Andrea points out, then he comes to this idea of birth, a gesture of eternity, and these lines, which are said with a kind of certainty. But the kind of certainty involved here is not the same as the kind of certainty that was involved in the earlier surely, which is a kind of a second coming, a parenting kind of context, right? The certainty that comes from the later part is something that is, I don't know how to say it exactly, but more universal and more internal than a parenting. So I'm struggling to express something, but I think the certainty that Aurobindo is talking about is not the one we would normally associate with certainty. And so
it's like the certainty beyond mine that he comes from.
Yeah.
Right? Beyond what we normally understand. He is way, way above all that. Well, that's the right way to say it. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, there are different kinds of certainties, right? I mean, if we're talking about like a statement, which in formal terms is a validity claim. If I say that X is true, based upon an observation, some kind of perception, and then others can verify whether or not X is true according to their observations. There's a kind of mental formula there where there's a claim and then there's an objective state of affairs, and we can evaluate whether or not any certainty that one might feel about a given claim is justified or not. But that's completely at the mental level, and it has to do with, you know, have we done our due diligence in kind of our cognitive processing to make, you know, defensible claims? And that's one kind of certainty, which I think we can come to through rationality, through argument, through experimentation, etc. Like, I'm certain that if I drop this pencil, it's going to fall, but that's an empirical kind of certainty. And I think that there's another kind of certainty which we're talking about and is more an aspect of faith, which is not, doesn't arise on the basis of objective perception, but on the basis of identity. It's something that one is and one feels from within and therefore can perceive and experience in objective conditions, but it's not a statement about objective conditions. It's a statement from a subjective identity, and the certainty comes from being rather than from perceiving or seeing or observing something separate from oneself. And I think that relates to this idea of knowledge by identity, which Aurobindo talks about in The Life Divine. I want to welcome any reflections on that, but I also wanted to know, like, the theme that I thought was interesting here between work and rest. There's this wanting for repose, for rest from the labor. I could actually really relate to that on a very personal level. I just feel that I've been working my whole, you know, not my whole life, but since I started going to school, and then, you know, as I became an adult, like, there's this endless labor, and you think, well, when are you ever going to finish? Every time you complete one set of tasks, there's a whole nother order of tasks that you have to move on to. And then here in this canto, we go from that, like, you know, personal context, like, oh, but that's happening in all of life. All of nature is working things out, trying to get to some completion that never arrives. And that, to me, I felt was kind of the underlying, you know, the conflict, you know, like the thing that's being really unloaded, like, from the heart in this canto, is like that feeling of it's never going to end. Like, your work is never going to finish because you're part of this vast unfinished, you know, business of nature. So I don't know how that relates to the kind of faith, the certainty thing, but I think maybe if there's a certainty, it's like seeing that one is like caught, you know, inside of this endless cycle, these endless loops, and that, you know, even though we will tend to think that we can get out of it, we're proved wrong, you know, each time that we experience some kind of partial and relative sense of completion or fulfillment. And so I think that there comes a point where you begin to see that and can start to disidentify with it and recognize that that's going to keep happening. Like, the work of the world is not going to be done, but there's another, I guess, like, basis or plane on which one can relate to it, or from which one can relate to it. That's what I'm starting to get from this, and that sort of, we're in the middle, you know, we haven't reached that certitude on the other side of the endless imbroglio, as you put it, one of my favorite words. Anyway.
What's that mean again? Imbroglio?
Impasse, kind of?
Impasse, thank you.
It's like, I almost think of, like, imagine like a big tangle of...
Yeah, a big tangle.
Conditions and...
To use Aurobindo's terms, to restate what you just said, Marco, the self-canceling, self-afflicting paradox into a self-luminous mystery might change.
Going from paradox to mystery, that's so beautiful.
I just wanted to add one thought into the certainty arena. When Sri Aurobindo talks from that larger certainty of identity, a lot of times his voice sounds prophetic to me. Not prophetic in the meaning of telling the future, but in the force and the power of it, of this larger knowledge coming through. Marco, I thought your words, no, it certainly wasn't a rant, it wasn't a ramble. Let's just say your words, it was beautiful.
Your riff.
I thought you really caught the spirit of this canto in what you said.
Shall we start over?
Sounds good to me. I like that riff, ramble, and rant all start with an R for some reason.
And rumble.
Rumble. Where are we as far as...
So who comes after me?
Marco. Yeah, I think the order is Marco, me, Jeffrey, John Robert, Andrea.
Jeffrey, Andrea, John Robert. That's how it was.
Okay. Marco, me, Jeffrey, Andrea, John Robert.
That's how it was, yeah.
Okay, good. Just a minute. How many pages is it? I want to check in on something really quick. 201, where does it start?
173.
So 201, 173, we're at 27 pages. 27 pages. Yeah, let's see how far we get. It's 27 pages and it is a good solid maybe hour and 10 minutes. We'll see.
So do you want to try to do the whole thing or should we set a stopping point maybe halfway through or something?
Let's ask everyone, when does everyone need to be transition onto their non-Savitri life? I'm good until noon, Pacific.
I would prefer that too.
Then wrapping before noon? Does anyone have to scoot before then?
No, but I can't go for later than that.
Let's check in on the time when we approach that last long section, or let's check in on the time when we approach any section and see where it is, and we'll quickly determine if we have time for. I can just quickly determine. I can take responsibility for that. So basically, let's kind of check in with stopping. Before, because I don't really want to start a section and stop halfway into a section.
Okay. So I'm going to start this content. I'm going to start over.
Please do.
All right. Canto 6, The Kingdoms and Godheads of the Greater Life. As one who between dim receding walls, towards the far gleam of a tunnel's mouth, hoping for light, walks now with freer pace and feels approach a breath of wider air, so he escaped from that gray anarchy. Into an ineffectual world he came, a purposeless region of arrested birth, where being from non-being fled and dared to live, but had no strength long to abide. Above there gleamed a pondering brow of sky tormented, crossed by wings of doubtful haze, adventuring with a voice of roaming winds and crying for a direction in the void, like blind souls looking for the selves they lost and wandering through unfamiliar worlds. Wings of vague questioning met the query of space. After denial dawned a dubious hope, a hope of self and form and leave to live and the birth of that which never yet could be, and joy of the mind's hazard, the heart's choice, grace of the unknown and hands of sudden surprise, and a touch of sure delight in unsure things. To a strange, uncertain tract his journey came, where consciousness played with unconscious self, and birth was an attempt or episode. A charm drew near that could not keep its spell, an eager power that could not find its way, a chance that chose a strange arithmetic, but could not bind with it the forms it made, a multitude that could not guard its sum, which less than zero grew, and more than one. A multitude that could not guard its sum, which less than zero grew, and more than one.
Arriving at a large and shadowy scene that cared not to define its...
Maxwell.
Thank you. Arriving at a large and shadowy sense that cared not to define its fleeting drift, life labored in a strange and mythic air, denuded of her sweet, magnificent suns. In worlds imaged, never yet made true, a lingering glimmer on creation's verge, one strayed and dreamed and never stopped to achieve. To achieve would have destroyed that magic space. The marvels of a twilight wonderland, full of beauty, strangely, vainly made, a surge of fanciful realities, dim tokens of a splendor sealed above, awoke the passion of the eye's desire, compelled belief on the enamored thought, and drew the heart, but led it to no goal. A magic flowed, as if of moving scenes, that kept a while their fugitive delicacy of sparring lines limned by an abstract art in a rare scanted light with faint dream brush on a silver background of incertitude. An infant glow of heavens near to morn, a fire intense conceived but never lit, caressed the air with ardent hints of day, the perfect longing for imperfection's charm, the illumined caught by the snare of ignorance, ethereal creatures drawn by body's lure, to that region of promise, beating invisible wings, came hungry for the joy of finite life, but too divine to tread created soil and share the fate of perishable things. The children of the unembodied gleam, arisen from a formless thought in the soul and chased by an imperishable desire, traversed the field of the pursuing gaze. A will that, unpersisting, failed, worked there. Life was a search, but finding never came.
There nothing satisfied, but all allured. Things seem to be that never wholly are, Images were seen that looked like living acts, and symbols hid the sense they claimed to show. Pale dreams grew real to the dreamer's eyes. The souls came there that vainly strive for birth, and spirits entrapped might wander through all time, yet never find the truth by which they live. All ran like hopes that hunt a lurking chance. Nothing was solid, nothing felt complete. All was unsafe, miraculous, and half true. It seemed a realm of lives that had no base. Then dawned a greater seeking, broadened sky, a journey under wings of brooding force. First came the kingdom of the morning star, a twilight beauty trembled under its spear and the throb of promise of a wider life. Then slowly rose a great and doubting sun, and in its light she made of self a world. A spirit was there that sought for its own deep self, yet was content with fragments pushed in front and parts of living that belied the whole, but pieced together might one day be true. Yet something seemed to be achieved at last. A growing volume of the will to be, a text of living and a graph of force, a script of acts, a song of conscious forms, burdened with meanings fugitive from thought's grasp, and crowded with undertones of life's rhythmic cry, could write itself on the heart of living things. In an outbreak of the might of secret spirit, in life and matter's answer of delight, some face of deathless beauty could be caught that gave immortality to a moment's joy, some word that could incarnate highest truths, leapt out from a chance tension of the soul. Some hue of the absolute could fall on life, some glory of knowledge and intuitive sight, some passion of the rapturous heart of love.
So, John Robert, I believe we did skip your turn. I think it's your turn now. And then I'll come after you.
A hierophant of the bodiless secrecy, interned in an unseen spiritual sheath, the will that pushes sense beyond its scope to feel the light and joy intangible, half found its way into the ineffable's peace, half captured a sealed sweetness of desire that yearned from a bosom of mysterious bliss, half manifested veiled reality. A soul not wrapped into its cloak of mind could glimpse the true sense of a world of forms. Illumined by a vision in the thought, a buoy by the heart's understanding flame, it could hold in the conscious ether of the spirit the divinity of a symbol universe. This realm inspires us with our vaster hopes. Its forces have made landings on our globe. Its signs have traced their pattern in our lives. It lends a sovereign movement to our fate. Its errant waves motive our life's high surge. All that we seek for is prefigured there. And all we have not known nor ever sought, which yet one day must be born in human hearts, that the timeless may fulfill itself in things. Incarnate in the mystery of the days, eternal in an unclosed infinite, a mounting endless possibility climbs high upon a topless ladder of dream, forever in the being's conscious trance. all on that ladder mounts to an unseen end. An energy of perpetual transience makes the journey from which no return is sure, the pilgrimage of nature to the unknown.
As if in her ascent to her lost source, she hoped to unroll all that could ever be, her high possession moves from stage to stage, a progress leap from sight to greater sight, a process march from form to ampler form, a caravan of the inexhaustible formations of a boundless thought and force. Her timeless power that lay once on the lap of a beginningless and endless calm, now severed from the spirit's immortal bliss, erects the type of all the joys she has lost, compelling transient substance into shape. She hopes by the creative act's release to o'erleap sometimes the gulf she cannot fill, to heal a while the wound of severance, escape from the moment's prison of littleness, and meet the eternal's wide sublimities in the uncertain time field portioned here. Almost she nears what never can be attained. She shuts eternity into an hour and fills a little soul with the infinite. The immobile leans to the magic of her call. She stands on a shore in the illimitable, perceives the formless dweller in all forms, and feels around her infinity's embrace. Her task no ending knows. She serves no aim but labors driven by a nameless will that came from some unknowable formless vast. This is her secret and impossible task, to catch the boundless in a net of birth, to cast the spirit into physical form, to lend speech and thought to the ineffable. She is pushed to reveal the ever unmanifest. Yet by her skill, the impossible has been done. She follows her sublime irrational plan, invents devices of her magic art to find new bodies for the infinite and images of the unimaginable. She has lured the eternal into the arms of time.
Even now, herself, she knows not what she has done. For all is wrought beneath a baffling mask, a semblance other than its hidden truth, the aspect wears of an illusion's trick, a feigned, time-driven unreality, the unfinished creation of a changing soul in a body changing with the inhabitant. Insignificant her means, infinite her work. On a great field of shapeless consciousness, in little finite strokes of mind and sense, an endless truth she endlessly unfolds. A timeless mystery works out in time. The greatness she has dreamed her acts have missed. Her labor is a passion and a pain, a rapture and pang, her glory and her curse. And yet she cannot choose, but labors on. Her mighty heart forbids her to desist. As long as the world lasts, her failure lives, astonishing and foiling reason's gaze. A folly and a beauty unspeakable, a superb madness of the will to live, a daring, a delirium of delight. This is her being's law. its sole resource. She sates, though satisfaction never comes. Her hungry will to lavish everywhere her many-imaged fictions of the self and thousand fashions of one reality. A world she made touched by truth's fleeing hem. A world cast into a dream of what it seeks. An icon of truth, a conscious mystery's shape. It lingered not like the earth mind hemmed in solid barriers of apparent fact. It dared to trust the dream mind and the soul.
A hunter of spiritual verities, still only thought or guessed or held by faith, it seized in imagination and confined a painted bird of paradise in a cage. This greater life is enamored of the unseen. It calls to some highest light beyond its reach. It can feel the silence that absolves the soul. It feels a savior touch, a ray divine. Beauty and good and truth its godheads are. It is near to a heavenlier heaven. It is near to heavenlier heavens than earth's eyes see. A dire darkness than man's life can bear. It has kinship with the demon and the god. A strange enthusiasm has moved its heart. It hungers for heights. It passions for the supreme. It hunts for the perfect word, the perfect shape. It leaps to the summit of thought, the summit light. For by the form, the formless is brought close, and all perfection fringes the absolute. A child of heaven who never saw his home, its impetus meets the eternal at a point. It can only near and touch, it cannot hold. It can only strain towards some bright extreme. Its greatness is to seek and to create. On every plane, this greatness must create. On heaven, in earth, in hell, she is the same. Of every fate, she takes her mighty part. A guardian of the fire that lights the suns, she triumphs in her glory and her might. Opposed, oppressed, she bears God's urge to be born. The spirit survives upon non-being's ground. World force outlasts world delusion shock. Dumb, she is still the word, inert the power. Here fallen, a slave of death and ignorance, to things deathless, she is driven to aspire and moved to know even the unknown. Her sleep creates a world.
When most unseen, most mightily she works, housed in the atom, buried in the clod, her quick creative passion cannot cease. In conscience is her long, gigantic pause, her cosmic swoon is a stupendous phase. Time born, she hides her immortality. In death, her bed, she waits the hour to rise. Even with the light denied that sent her forth, and the hope dead she needed for her task, even when her brightest stars are quenched in night, nourished by hardship and calamity and with pain for her body's handmaid, masseuse, nurse, her tortured invisible spirit continues still to toil, though in darkness, to create, though with pangs. She carries crucified God upon her breast. In chill, insentient depths where joy is none, immured, oppressed by the resisting void where nothing moves and nothing can become, she still remembers, still invokes the skill the wonder worker gave her at her birth, imparts to drowsy formlessness a shape, reveals a world where nothing was before. In realms confined to a prone circle of death, to a dark eternity of ignorance, a quiver in inert, inconscient mass, or imprisoned in immobilized whirls of force, by matter's blind compulsion, deaf and mute, she refuses motionless in the dust to sleep. Then for her rebel waking's punishment, given only hard mechanic circumstance as the enginery of her magic craft, she fashions godlike marvels out of mud. In the plasm, she sets her dumb immortal urge, helps the live tissue to think, the closed sense to feel, flashes through the frail nerves poignant messages in a heart of flesh, miraculously loves, to brute bodies gives a soul, a will, a voice.
Ever she summons, as by a sorcerer's wand, beings and shapes and scenes innumerable, torchbearers of her pomps through time and space. This world is her long journey through the night, the suns and planets lamps to light her road. Our reason is the confidant of her thoughts. Our senses are her vibrant witnesses. There, drawing her signs from things half true, half false, she labors to replace by realized dreams the memory of her lost eternity. These are her deeds in this huge world ignorance. Till the veil is lifted, till the night is dead, in light or dark, she keeps her tireless search. Time is her road of endless pilgrimage. One mighty passion motives all her works. Her eternal lover is her action's cause. For him, she leaped forth from the unseen vasts to move here in a stark, unconscious world. Its acts are her commerce with her hidden guest. His moods she takes for her heart's passionate molds. In beauty, she treasures the sunlight of his smile. Ashamed of her rich cosmic poverty, she cajoles with her small gifts his mightiness, holds with her scenes his looks fidelity, and woos his large-eyed wandering thoughts to dwell in figures of her million impulsed force. Only to attract her veiled companion and keep him close to her breast in her world cloak, lest from her arms he turn to his formless peace, is her heart's business and her clinging care. Yet when he is most near, she feels him far, for contradiction is her nature's law. Although she is ever in him and he in her, as if unaware of the eternal tie, Her will is to shut God into her works and keep him as her cherished prisoner, that never they may part again in time.
A sumptuous chamber of the spirit's sleep at first she made, a deep interior room where he slumbers as if a forgotten guest. But now she turns to break the oblivious spell, awakes the sleeper on the sculptured couch. She finds again the presence in the form and in the light that wakes with him, recovers a meaning in the hurry and trudge of time. And through this mind that once obscured the soul passes a glint of unseen deity. Across a luminous dream of spirit's face, she builds creation like a rainbow bridge between the original silence and the void. A net is made of the mobile universe. She weaves a snare for the conscious infinite. A knowledge is with her that conceals its steps and seems a mute, omnipotent ignorance. A might is with her that makes wonders true. The incredible is her stuff of common fact. Her purposes, her workings, riddles prove. Examined, they grow other than they were. Explained, they seem yet more inexplicable. Even in our world, a mystery has reigned. Earth's cunning screen of trivial plainness hides. Her larger levels are of sorceries made. There the enigma shows its splendid prison. There is no deep disguise of commonness. Occult, profound, comes all experience. Marvel is ever new, miracle divine. There is a screened burden, a mysterious touch. There is a secrecy of hidden sense. Although no earthen mask weighs on her face, into herself she flees from her own sight. All forms are tokens of some veiled idea, whose covert purpose lurks from mind's pursuit, yet is a womb of sovereign consequence.
There every thought and feeling is an act, and every act a symbol and a sign, and every symbol hides a living power. A universe she builds from truths and myths, but what she needed most she cannot build. All shown is a figure or copy of the truth, but the real veils from her its mystic face. All else she finds, there lacks eternity. All is sought out, but missed the infinite. How are we all doing? Continue?
Yeah, nice, thanks.
A consciousness lit by a truth above was felt. It saw the light, but not the truth. It caught the idea and built from it a world. It made an image there and called it God. Yet something true and inward harbored there. The beings of that world of greater life, tenants of a larger air and freer space, live not by the body or in outward things. A deeper living was their seat of self. In that intense domain of intimacy, objects dwell as companions of the soul. The body's actions are a minor script, the surface rendering of a life within. All forces are life's retinue in that world, and thought and body are her handmaids move. The universal widenesses give her room. All feel the cosmic movement in their acts, and are the instruments of her cosmic might. Or their own self they make their universe. In all who have risen to a greater life, a voice of unborn things whispers to the ear. To their eyes visited by some high sunlight, aspiration shows the image of a crown. To work out a seed that she has thrown within, to achieve her power in them, her creatures live.
Each is a greatness growing towards the heights, or from his inner center, oceans out, encircling ripples of concentric power, they swallow, glutted their environment, even of that largeness, many a cabin make, in narrower breadths and briefer vistas pent, they live content with some small greatness won, to rule the little empire of themselves, to be a figure in their private world, and make the milieu's joys and griefs their own, and satisfy their life motives and life wants, is charge enough, an office for this strength, a steward of the person and his fate. This was transition line and starting point, a first immigration into heavenliness for all who cross into that brilliant sphere. These are the kinsmen of our earthly race. This region borders on our mortal state. This wider world our greater movements gives. Its strong formations build our growing selves. Its creatures are our higher replicas, complete the types. We only initiate and are securely what we strive to be. As if thought out eternal characters, entire, not pulled as we by contrary tides, they follow the unseen leader in the heart. Their lives obey the inner nature's law. There is kept grandeur's store, the hero's mold. The soul is the watchful builder of its fate. None is a spirit indifferent and inert. They choose their side. They see the god they adore. A battle is joined between the true and false. A pilgrimage sets out to the divine light. For even ignorance there aspires to know and shines with the luster of a distant star. There is a knowledge in the heart of sleep, and nature comes to them as a conscious force.
Sorry, I need a page number. I've skipped to
top of 185.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. An ideal is their leader and their king. Aspiring to the monarchy of the sun, they call in truth for their high government, hold her incarnate in their daily acts, and fill their thoughts with her inspired voice, and shape their lives into her breathing form, till in her sun-gold godhead they too share. or to the truth of darkness they subscribe. Whether for heaven or hell, they must wage war. Warriors of good, they serve a shining cause, or are evil's soldiers in the pay of sin. For evil and good an equal tenure keep, wherever knowledge is ignorance's twin. All powers of life toward their godhead tend, in the wideness and the daring of that air. Each builds its temple and expands its cult, and sin too, there is a divinity. Affirming the beauty and splendor of her law, she claims life as her natural domain, assumes the world's throne, or dons the papal robe. Her worshippers proclaim her sacred right. A red tiara to falsehood they revere, worship the shadow of a crooked god, admit the black idea that twists the brain or lie with the harlot power that slays the soul. A mastering virtue statuesques the pose, or a titan passion goads to a proud unrest. As wisdom's altar, they are kings and priests, or their life a sacrifice to an idol of power. Or beauty shines on them like a wandering star, too far to reach, passionate they follow her light. In art and life, they catch the all-beautiful ray and make the world their radiant treasure house. Even common figures are with marvel robed. A charm and greatness locked in every hour awakes the joy which sleeps in all things made.
A mighty victory or a mighty fall, a throne in heaven or a pit in hell, the dual energy they have justified and marked their souls with her tremendous seal. Whatever fate may do to them, they have earned. Something they have done, something they have been, they live. Their matter is soul's result and not its cause. In a contrary balance to Earth's truth of things, the gross weighs less, the subtle counts for more. On inner values hangs the outer plan. As quivers with the thought, the expressive word, as yearns the act with the passion of the soul, this world's apparent sensible design looks vibrant back to some interior might. A mind not limited by external sense gave figures to the spirit's imponderables. The world's impacts without channels registered and turned into the body's concrete thrill, the vivid workings of a bodiless force. Powers here subliminal that act unseen or in ambush crouch waiting behind the wall came out in front, uncovering their face. The occult grew there overt. The obvious kept a covert turn and shouldered the unknown. The unseen was felt and jostled visible shapes. In the communion of two meeting minds, thought looked at thought and had no need of speech. Emotion clasped emotion in two hearts. They felt each other's thrill in the flesh and nerves, or melted each in each and grew immense as when two houses burn and fire joins fire. Hate grappled hate, and love broke in on love. Will wrestled with will on mind's invisible ground. Other sensations passing through like waves left quivering the subtle body's frame. Their anger rushed galloping in brute attack. a charge of trampling hooves on shaken soil. One felt another's grief invade the breast. Another's joy, exulting, ran through the blood. Hearts could draw close through distance, voices near that spoke upon the shore of alien seas.
There beat a throb of living interchange. Being felt being even when afar, and consciousness replied to consciousness. And yet the ultimate oneness was not there. There was a separateness of soul from soul. An inner wall of silence could be built, an armor of conscious might protect and shield. The being could be closed in and solitary. One could remain apart in self, alone. Identity was not yet, nor union's peace. All was imperfect still, half known, half done. The miracle of inconscience overpassed, the miracle of the superconscious still unknown, self-wrapped, unfelt, unknowable, looked down on them, origin of all they were. As forms they came of the formless infinite, as names lived of a nameless eternity. The beginning and the end were there occult. A middle term worked unexplained, abrupt. These were words that spoke to a vast, wordless truth. They were words that spoke to a vast, wordless truth. They were figures crowding an unfinished sum. None truly knew himself or knew the world or the reality living there enshrined. Only they knew what mind could take and build out of the secret supermind's huge store. A darkness under them, a bright void above, uncertain they lived in a great climbing space. By mysteries they explained the mystery. A riddling answer met the riddle of things. As he moved in this ether of ambiguous life, himself was soon a riddle to himself. As symbols, he saw all and sought their sense.
Across the leaping springs of death and birth, and over shifting borders of soul change, a hunter on the spirit's creative track, he followed in life's fine and mighty trails, pursuing her sealed formidable delight in a perilous adventure without close. At first, no aim appeared in those large steps. Only the wide source he saw of all things here, looking towards a wider source beyond. For as she drew away from earthly lines, a tenser drag was felt from the unknown. A higher context of delivering thought drove her towards marvel and discovery. There came a high release from pettier cares, a mightier image of desire and hope, a vaster formula, a greater scene. Ever she circled towards some far-off light. Her signs still covered more than they revealed, but tied to some immediate sight and will, they lost their purport in the joy of use. Till stripped of their infinite meaning, they became a cipher gleaming with unreal sense. Armed with a magical and haunted bow, she aimed at a target kept invisible and ever deemed remote, though always near. as one who spells illumined characters, the key book of a crabbed magician text. He scanned her subtle, tangled, weird designs and the screened difficult theorem of her clues. Traced in the monstrous sands of desert time, the thread beginnings of her Titan works. Watched her charade of action for some hint. Read the no gestures of her silhouettes and strove to capture in their burdened drift the dance fantasia of her sequences, escaping into rhythmic mystery, a glimmer of fugitive feet on fleeing soil.
In the labyrinth pattern of her thoughts and hopes, and the byways of her intimate desires, in the complex corners crowded with her dreams, and rounds crossed by an intrigue of irrelevant rounds, a wanderer straying amid fugitive scenes, he lost its signs and chased each failing guess. Ever he met keywords ignorant of their key, a sun that dazzled its own eye of sight, a luminous enigma's brilliant hood lit the dense purple barrier of thought's sky. A dim large trance showed to the night her stars, as if sitting near an open window's gap, he read by lightning flash on crowding flash chapters of her metaphysical romance of the soul's search for lost reality and her fictions drawn from spirit's authentic fact, her caprices and conceits and meanings locked, her rash, unsizable freaks and mysteried turns. The magnificent wrappings of her secrecy that fold her desirable body out of sight, the strange significant forms woven on her robe, her meaningful outlines of the souls of things he saw, her false transparencies of thought hue, her rich brocades and imaged fancies sewn, and mutable masks and broideries of disguise. A thousand baffling faces of the truth looked at him from her forms with unknown eyes, and wordless mouths unrecognizable spoke from the figures of her masquerade or peered from the recondite magnificence and subtle splendor of her draperies.
In sudden scintillations of the unknown, inexpressive sounds became veridical. Ideas that seemed unmeaning flashed out truth. Voices that came from unseen waiting worlds uttered the syllables of the unmanifest to clothe the body of the mystic word, and wizard diagrams of the occult law sealed some precise, unreadable harmony, or used hue and figure to reconstitute the herald blazon of time's secret things. In her green wildernesses and lurking depths, in her thickets of joy, where danger clasps delight, he glimpsed the hidden wings of her songster hopes, a glimmer of blue and gold and scarlet fire. In her covert lanes, bordering her chance field paths, and by her singing rivulets and calm lakes, he found the glow of her golden fruits of bliss and the beauty of her flowers of dream and muse. As if a miracle of hearts changed by joy, he watched in the alchemist radiance of her sun's the crimson outburst of one secular flower on the tree of sacrifice of spiritual love. In the sleepy splendor of her noons, he saw a perpetual repetition through the hours, thoughts dance of dragonflies on mystery's stream that skim but never test its murmurs race, and heard the laughter of her rose desires running as if to escape from longed for hands, jingling sweet ankle bells of fantasy. Amidst live symbols of her occult power, he moved and felt them as close real forms. In that life more concrete than the lives of men, throbbed heartbeats of the hidden reality. Embodied was there what we but think and feel, self-framed what here takes outward borrowed shapes. A comrade of silence on her austere heights, accepted by her mighty loneliness, he stood with her on meditating peaks where life and being are a sacrament offered to the reality beyond, and saw her loose into infinity, her hooded eagles of insignificance, messengers of thought to the unknowable.
Identified in soul vision and soul sense, entering into her depths as into a house, all he became that she was or longed to be. He thought with her thoughts and journeyed with her steps, lived with her breath and scanned all with her eyes, that so he might learn the secret of her soul. A witness overmastered by his scene, he admired her splendid front of pomp and play and the marvels of her rich and delicate craft, and thrilled to the insistence of her cry. Impassioned, he bore the sorceries of her might, felt laid on him her abrupt, mysterious will, her hands that knead fate in their violent grasp, her touch that moves, her powers that seize and drive. But this too he saw, her soul that wept within, her seekings vain that clutch at fleeing truth, her hopes whose somber gaze mates with despair, the passion that possessed her longing limbs, the trouble and rapture of her yearning breasts, her mind that toils unsatisfied with its fruits, her heart that captures not the one beloved. Always he met a veiled and seeking force, an exiled goddess building mimic heavens, a sphinx whose eyes look up to a hidden sun.
Shall we end with a brief meditation?
I think it's a good place to stop, so meditation sounds good. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody. Nice to be with you again. Been a long time. Seems like it.
In 2 weeks this time, so.
Okay, bye everyone. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye, friends.